Friday, March 18th, 1983, 3 p.m., Hearing Room A, hearing Senate Bill 405 and Senate Bill 318, Senate Committee on Energy and Environment.
Where are you?
Hiya.
I just had the grand
thing. The Energy and Environment Committee will come to order. The clerk will note those present. Those absent are excused. The first item is a message from our administrator concerning Senate Bill 112, which we passed out of committee last time.
We've had some problems with some of the language that was proposed on the day of our last hearing by Metro, dealing with the first page of the bill, and it had to do with just ensuring that resource recovery facilities could get tax credits under the bill due to some earlier changes of sole purpose and that sort of thing. Council has said that, well, Council drafted the language, and then DEQ says that that will allow some other plants other than resource recovery facilities of the nature that we're talking about, such as mills, and maybe Stan Biles could tell it more completely. But what we need to know is I just wanted to explain that to the committee, that that's what the holdup is, and they need to know that it's all right to go ahead and draft some new language.
Basically. Mr. Chairman, since I made the move on that, I would indicate that I would like to have this corrected because we only intended it for resource recovery, and and that would be the instruction I'd like to see our administrator pursue.
Okay. He'll continue working, and as soon as that's resolved, we'll let you know. I noticed also no one has signed up for Senate Bill 318, is that correct? Did anyone come here solely to testify on 318? Okay, we had word that the principal parties involved or interested in that were unable to attend today, so we will set that off for another day. I'd like to take the committee for a moment into a work session, a short work session concerning the reappointment of Roy Hemingway to the Northwest Power Planning Council.
Mr. Chairman?
I recognize Senator Day.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that we approve and confirm the appointment of Roy Hemingway to Northwest Energy, whatever the funny group is that's helping us.
Power Planning Council.
Power Planning Council, and send it to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Day has moved that we send Mr. Hemingway's renomination to the floor with a recommendation for confirmation. Is there discussion? Those in favor will say aye when their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Cohen?
Aye.
Senator Day?
Aye.
Senator Hurd?
Aye.
Senator Starkovich?
Aye. The motion carries. We'll now begin the hearing on Senate Bill 405. You should have a staff measure analysis and a letter from the Oregon Sanitary Service Institute. Before I get into that, Senator Roberts, we just passed out Mr. Hemingway's re-nomination to the Northwest Power Planning Council. Do you wish to have a vote recorded?
No, that's all right.
Okay. Senate Bill 405, will the administrator care to go over that, please?
Not really.
318 has been for
I think you should just want it.
You want to do that?
Otherwise, I have to go through a section by section analysis.
Okay. The first witness that has signed up is Lori Parker. Lori, welcome. Will you please, for the record, state your name and.
I don't have a 405. I don't have any statement that goes with it. You have those? You have extra ones?
I think it's in
another book.
Go ahead.
My name is Lori Parker. I'm here representing Oregon Environmental Council today.
I'm a board member of OEC. Your committee introduced Senate Bill 405 for Oregon Environmental Council, and we thank you for that courtesy. Oregon generates 2 million tons of garbage every year, 1,500 pounds of garbage from every person every year, 4 pounds of garbage per person each day. 30% of that garbage is material which could readily be recycled, resulting in less need for scarce landfill space. Even more important, recycling conserves energy, is environmentally beneficial, and saves natural resources that would otherwise be buried in landfills. Manufacture of aluminum from secondary materials saves from 92 to 97% of the energy which would be required for production from virgin materials. Energy savings for production of paper and glass from recycled materials is also substantial. When secondary rather than virgin materials are used in the manufacturing process, there are other important environmental benefits. Air and water pollution resulting from the manufacturing process is greatly reduced. Water use is decreased, and there are no mining wastes to dispose of. The more that material is recycled, the less need there is to use valuable and finite natural resources. A side benefit is that recycling can supply industry with a reliable supply of secondary materials, thus encouraging new industries. I wanted to give you that kind of introduction because this is a bill to encourage recycling, and sometimes we forget why it's a good thing to recycle. And there are multiple benefits, and I wanted to recite them. The obvious conclusion from all those benefits is that recycling should be an integral part of Oregon's solid waste management program, and that all persons should be encouraged to recycle. Unfortunately, Oregon does not have a solid waste management program. ORS Chapter 459, which contains Oregon's solid waste management laws, is a mishmash of policies which suggest that solid waste management would be a nice thing to do. But nowhere does it tell anybody that they are responsible for solid waste and should plan or take responsibility for solid waste management and/or disposal. As a result of this laissez-faire system, a variety of entities, both public and private, have taken over responsibility for disposing of solid waste in this state. Some cities and counties have chosen to be involved with solid waste. Some have chosen not to be involved. Because there is no requirement for waste management, obviously there are no standards. So in some parts of the state, there are good waste reduction programs. In other parts, there are half-hearted attempts at recycling. And in other locations, the population has no opportunity to recycle. In other words, not everyone in Oregon who is willing to recycle has an easy opportunity to do so. Considering the multiple benefits of recycling, it is OEC's belief that the opportunity to recycle must be provided to every person in Oregon. Therefore, we have introduced Senate Bill 405, and Senate Bill 405 provides for the opportunity to recycle by requiring at least a recycling drop-off center in conjunction with every disposal site. This means that every person in Oregon would at least be able to go to the location where their solid waste is going and be able to recycle at that location. For people in cities of more than 5,000, they would also be able to curbside recycle. In other words, recycling would come to their doorstep at least once a month. And thirdly, that there must be a public education program to encourage, to announce the service, to get people to participate. The requirement for providing the opportunity is placed on disposal site permittees. The permittee must provide the opportunity to recycle to every person whose solid waste enters the disposal site. No person is required to recycle, but at least everyone will have an opportunity to do so. OEC believes that given the opportunity to recycle in an easy, convenient way, most people will do so. The many benefits which I have already discussed will then result. Our view is perhaps an optimistic one, but surely people should be given a chance to demonstrate their willingness to assist in solving our solid waste problems before we make the assumption that they will not voluntarily participate in waste reduction, thus requiring a mandatory program. Requiring the disposal site permittee to provide the recycling opportunity does not mean that the permittee must directly provide the service, though that is possible. Because the permittee, through operation of the disposal site, controls the flow of garbage into the landfill, he or she can mandate that garbage haulers participate in the program, or the permittee can use the rate structure to collect funds to provide the service either directly or through contractual arrangements with recyclers. Or there can be any number of combinations of participation, which in total will provide the required service. OEC wants to see our goal of increased recycling attained. Our bill does not designate who should provide the service. Because we have not designated who should actually provide the recycling, both garbage haulers and for-profit recyclers are uneasy about how this bill will affect their business. Garbage haulers know that for every additional ton of material which is recycled, there will be that much less garbage to collect and that much less income to them. Recyclers know that garbage haulers will therefore become increasingly involved in recycling and will compete with them. Recyclers and haulers have a justified self-interest in this bill. It's understandable and it's natural for them to be uneasy. Senate Bill 405 will substantially shift the market from garbage services to recycling services, causing a change in the status quo. But for the citizenry as a whole, that shift and resulting competition should result in a recycling system far better than anything the state now has. Requiring disposal site permittees to provide for recycling is admittedly not the most direct method to establish a statewide recycling program. However, aside from completely rewriting the entire solid waste chapter of law and battling out who should be responsible for solid waste management, there appears to be no other way to accomplish our goal. This bill is the result of more than 6 months of discussion among OEC members, recyclers, DEQ staff persons, and representatives of metro, local governments, garbage haulers, and landfill operators. The only alternative approach offered, one favored openly by the solid waste industry and to some extent by DEQ, is to give DEQ authority to require local governments to manage solid waste and to develop solid waste management plans which meet certain standards. Recycling would then be required as part of the waste reduction program. Because of the enormity of revising the entire solid waste program, as well as the fact that local governments would be required to take on an additional duty which would in turn require additional funding, it is our best guess that passage of an upfront approach to recycling was not possible this session. We do not oppose such an approach, and in fact want to encourage you to propose an interim task force to revise the solid waste law and to set up a comprehensive solid waste management program for the state. In the meantime, we think that Senate Bill 405 offers a realistic approach which can work without imposing additional duties and costs on local government. It uses the only handle the state has over solid waste, the issuance of the permit for solid waste disposal sites, in order to achieve our goal of increased recycling. The only fiscal impact will be DEQ's costs for rulemaking and reviewing revised permits. The definition of materials to be recycled is based on a cost-effectiveness standard, which includes only those materials which, as a group, can be collected and sold for recycling at a net cost equal to or less than the cost of collection and disposal of the same material. In other words, recycling will be offered only when it is cheaper than landfilling. Therefore, there will be no additional cost to customers. The definition allows for geographic and market differences, so that Prineville, for example, which is hundreds of miles from most of its markets, would not be required to recycle the same materials as would be required in Portland, where markets are nearby and transportation costs are much less. In summary, Senate Bill 405 will offer the opportunity to recycle to every person in the state. We believe that recycling will increase as a result of these expanded opportunities, thus lengthening the life of landfills, saving energy and natural resources, lessening air and water pollution, and creating new recycling industries and strengthening existing ones. And we ask your support. Now, I would be happy to walk you through this bill section by section if you would want more of a feel for what's really there, or I'd be glad to come back and do that during a work session. Or to answer any questions.
Are there any questions, Senator Roberts?
With reference to Section 5, uh, how do you, what have you thought or how have you considered the process, procedure or uniform rules or something, which might be offered to permittees or disposal operators of disposal sites. The procedure that they would attempt to use to discharge their obligation to ensure that those who were dumping at their site had instituted or had made available the opportunity to separate, opportunity to recycle.
First of all, the group, there is a large task force under DEQ's auspices, which has been looking at this bill, and it pretty well takes under its wing all the parties that would be directly affected.
Is this sort of a legislative
advisory DEQ
group?
Exactly. And we've been debating the bill for a long time now, and I think it's pretty clear that DEQ will have to rule make under this bill to clarify the process for this permit revision. This will be just another condition of the permit process. And what we envision happening is that the permittee, or the person who's applying for the permit, will come in and have to document that the opportunity is being provided. And because the bill allows a lot of flexibility in who's providing, it may be that he's going to show that X, X, and X cities come into his landfill, and they all have franchises, and all those franchises require this kind of recycling opportunity.
What if he has to show that those cities don't have franchising, and therefore there isn't any ready-made arrangement?
All right. In that case, they will have to show either that the haulers are providing the opportunity, or that there is some other kind of arrangement that they have contracted with recyclers, for example, to provide the opportunity.
Is it possible that this committee might be provided with a sort of a sample or a model or a for instance to demonstrate the fact that that this would be something which was feasible for the haulers to provide such guarantees?
Mm-hmm. We've gone through lots of for instances. Part of the problem is that in the state of Oregon, there's about as many kinds of arrangements for handling solid waste as one could think of. And so you have to go through a lot of for instances to get them all.
Well, Ms. Parker, that, of course, is one of the problems that this bill has to deal with, is that there are those great variations, and I would assume that we need to have some satisfaction that those problems have worked out or that they are workable. They could be done in short order before it would be very easy to mandate this provision.
I agree.
I'm highly supportive of the principle here, and I just hope that that kind of work can be done in time so that the committee could act responsibly on this bill. Thank you, Ms. Chair.
I will bring that for you.
Any further questions of Lori? Okay, thank you very much. And if and when the bill does come to work session, you said you would be available?
Yes, and I would tell you now that OEC has continued to work on this since it was introduced, and so we will have amendments of our own which reflect concerns of a lot of different groups.
Okay, thank you. Stand here. Joe Richards of the Environmental Quality Commission.
Senator Starkovich and members of the committee, my name is Joe Richards. I'm a lawyer in private practice in Eugene. I've been chairman of the Environmental Quality Commission for about 7.5 years. I signed up for myself and the EQC, and on reflection, I believe I'm just speaking for myself in the sense that the full five-person commission has not reviewed 405. From the discussions we had on our own bill, I suspect they would strongly support it. The legislature faces two overwhelming environmental concerns in this session. The first is the more well-known one that particulate emissions from wood stoves is going to stop industrial growth and cause a cutback in industrial output and significant job losses unless steps are taken to stem the rapid rise in those particulates. But the second, and also very important, is the subject that we have today. And there again, I think we're going to strangle on our own solid waste and miss a great opportunity to save energy and save natural resources through recycling if we don't address a method for source separation of waste before that waste is collected. DEQ's control of disposal permits is the only control that it has at the present time, and that isn't sufficiently effective. The best approach is for the legislature to require source separation of recyclable materials and to prohibit the collection of non-complying materials. Now, that is not what this bill does. I'm saying that I believe that is the best approach. Volunteer efforts are simply not doing the job. And there are great volunteer efforts. You'll hear about some of those today. Yamhill County is one of those. And what's happening there is exceeding what Senate Bill 405 requires. It encourages source separation. It gives the, quote, opportunity to recycle, just as specified in Section 2 of this bill. But the officials there do not have hard data, yet they estimate about 15% participation in that collection system. And it's a great effort, but 15% won't solve the problem. Corvallis is another good volunteer program. It's up to 70% participation in what some of the officials call the higher income neighborhoods and 10% in the lower income neighborhoods. And just speaking for Eugene, I guess that'd mean 10% participation for about everywhere in Eugene these days.
Oh, God.
So I'm supporting Senate Bill 405 with the amendments that DEQ and Oregon Environmental Council are in the process of working out at this time, and others will address those amendments. But I want you to understand that I favor the mandating of source separation after an approximate three-year period, as there is in this bill, because we have to wait a reasonable time for the collectors to make adjustments for equipment and that kind of thing. As the body politic, we have to do at least as much as there is in Senate Bill 405. We may not be paving the whole countryside into one parking lot, as Jamie Mitchell says, but we do have the potential of becoming one giant landfill and a land of wasted opportunity. There's a market for all of those substances that I mentioned, the paper, the metal, and glass materials. Pulp and paper industry will use up to 30% of waste paper in the production of pulp for newsprint, and the same amount for waste liner board to produce new liner board. So why do we permit waste paper and cardboard to be buried? It's already been mentioned by the OEC representative Lloyd Parker that this bill would establish a large rulemaking area for EQC. For example, what does the opportunity to recycle really mean? Who's going to provide the service and at what level? And EQC will have to list the materials typically recyclable, because what is economically salvageable in one part of the state certainly is not in another. In some parts, nothing is resalvageable. And we do have to keep in mind, you have to use a test of being able to resell the recycled material for more than it costs to collect it and landfill it. Finally, I'm aware of the main test that you have to apply to this legislation. And the representative of the collectors, Roger Emmons, has said it as well as anybody can say it in a letter he wrote to me last week. If government is going to be in the business of mandating the opportunity to recycle, then it should clearly set out the general guidelines that have to be followed, tell local governments what is expected of them, and tell all those involved in recycling what is expected of them as well. It is wise policy to set the major guidelines and permit an administrative agency to fill in the details. In this state, the DEQ and EQC have a good track record of fair and workable regulation to supplement all kinds of general legislation in the subject of air, water, and subsurface. So I'm convinced that the fine-tuning can be done by this agency. But one thing, for example, in this bill, I'm not sure it permits DEQ to define recyclable materials, because the chapter on solid waste even has a specific reference that DEQ may define wastes. So the suggestion is, if you're going to let that agency define one term, that it is prohibited from defining others. So I think we have to attend to that. So I'm really asking you to adopt this bill with whatever amendments you can add that will strengthen this concept, that until a generator of solid waste, and that's households and businesses and others, is required to source-separate, and the non-separated materials not be permitted in the landfill, we will not have addressed the issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions of Joe Richards? Senator Cohen.
I agree with you, and I guess if we get mandatory source separation, I'm told that the real problem is who's going to enforce that, and then we add another burden onto the haul or the people who, either the recyclers or the haulers, especially the haulers who are going to be taking these things. And then we get back down to economics. Do you have a sense that the person who generates the garbage in this day and age is paying the full share of the costs of both the environmental concerns and the costs of disposing of it?
No.
How are we gonna go about making people respond to the economy of what it really costs to do that? Do you have any suggestions on that?
Fee increases. It must cost me more to take my garbage someplace. I'm not paying the cost of what I'm doing back to the environment and the lost opportunity for saving energy and resources. There are a lot of places where we just simply force people to do things. We force them to drive cars with catalytic converters because we just got too much carbon monoxide in the air. And this isn't the first time we just said to the citizen, this is it. We have a new consciousness about this phase. Now you have to decide if you agree that it's important to recycle these materials and save the energy and the resource. If it is, then the person that's causing it needs to contribute to it. I don't think the garbage collector should bear any additional costs or lose any profit in this whole thing. We just have to work out a way to first solve the jurisdictional thing between the recycler and the hauler, where there's a difference, and make sure they don't lose. The householder, the business, has to pay the cost of doing this business of getting rid of garbage. We can all go down to the store and we can buy plain carrots, not canned carrots. We can go, Mr. Day, I mean, it's all right, I guess, to can certain things.
I'm sure glad you let me off on that one.
Maybe I'll just quit there.
Don't get out of control. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Roberts was next.
Mr. Richards, in this bill, what specific ways in which it would operate, can you identify which in effect would assure that the person who creates the waste would indeed bear the cost, and the proper cost, not overly charged, not undercharged? How would that work out in this?
It's not clear from the bill, because that would require rulemaking. There are financial impacts in this bill. When we're talking about the local government who's going to issue franchises, and we talk about the department who's going to issue disposal site permits and continue to issue, it's going to take some fee structures. One of the incentives for causing handlers of this material to recycle is that maybe you would increase fees at the dump site if they didn't recycle, and that's one of the mechanisms. I just think it's going to have to be a period of rulemaking, and that's why it also ought to be set off 3 years. If you give DEQ the authority, it could come back with a full set of rules by the next legislative session, and everybody gets to take their shot. And then if you don't like the way this thing is going, you can build some more things into the statute, or maybe you'll see a model of how the thing would work by that time.
I can see how it could be done on a community to community where there was franchising. I find it more difficult to see how it could be done when there isn't any franchising. And I happen to live in a rather large city that doesn't have franchising.
It is difficult.
But, Mr. Chairman, I assume, I've forgotten now the details on the timing of this thing. I assume that this would be put into motion but would not become effective for 3 years.
July 1 of 86 is in Section
and
3.
And so, theoretically, then the next legislature could review those proposed details of the administration of this.
I think that would be wise.
I don't think that's in the bill. That might be one of those amendments. Is that correct?
Possible to put a dollar figure on. And as we understand the definition of recycled materials included in here, there's a heavy dependence upon that dollar, the economic measurement. I guess something that Chairman Richards hinted at earlier is that the complete disposal costs are not included currently in fees, because a lot of the environmental concerns, the long-term environmental costs, are not included in that charge. I don't know. It's a tough one to answer. I don't have a good answer.
You can certainly reduce the cost of collection by increasing the fee to the individual who originates the solid waste. I feel a little uncomfortable with that definition. Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Day.
You provided our staff with a fiscal impact concern?
Yes, we did. I don't know.
Line 19.
In the traditional manner, Senator Day.
We didn't get a statement yet.
You did not get a statement yet?
Okay. I'd kind of like to, when they do, I'd like to have that, but the question I wanted to ask you, it seems to me a lot of this on how you don't automatically raise the tipping fee at a landfill, and that automatically that can be passed back to the person generating the garbage. That's some of the biggest argument with these with the people that are trying to pick up the garbage. You don't automatically get that done. And I guess, how would you feel about a proposition?
Do it if you want to.
Well, I guess if you have the courage, but it doesn't happen that way very often, okay? You raise the tipping.
I think it happened in my area where fees were increased.
Well, I guess what I'm trying to say, Senator Roberts, is that here, at least locally, my experience has been they have a franchise, they'll propose certain things to occur.
All right, we're not operating under a franchise. That's the difference.
Yeah. The difference is, I think, is the franchise, and that's why I wanted to bring it up. But even if you weren't, it'd be even more difficult, maybe, in order to get it done, because you may put an unusual burden on some haulers because of the type of material they receive from a particular industrial area, as I recall, and that's some of your problem up in Portland. But how would you feel if we decided to amend our policy in this bill? The question of franchises are under judicial review right now. And I'm not so certain that the state couldn't take a position that it's necessary in the future to start having, actually legitimizing franchises, perhaps even grandfathering people who are currently in the business. And by doing that, we start to put a mandatory effort on a basis of areas inundated, simply like we do air sheds. How do you feel about that? And that's a method we could actually, then we could produce certain funds to DEQ as a result of for the administration of this. But how would you feel about that legally if we were to approach it, and do you think it's feasible? Mr. Chairman, Senator Day, there will probably be others that will be testifying today or later in the process about the franchising issue.
there's concern by some that this bill, indeed, if not mandating, strongly encourages a trend towards franchising, just so that some individuals can get a better handle on the process from the beginning point right through to the end point. There is a great deal of concern for that very reason, even with the approach taken in this bill. A concern and opposition, I suppose, to franchising for a variety of reasons. We have not discussed at the department level an option like that of a mandatory franchising provision. There are some advantages to be gained from it, but there are a lot of concerns which probably can be better spoken to by members of the industry. So I don't know how we would respond to that.
Let me just ask one other question. Forgetting the, let's say that you had it, do you feel in your mind, if you had that kind of authority, do you feel in your own mind that you would have a better authority to produce the recycling effort that's necessary to cut down on landfills in the state of Oregon if you had if that kind of authority exists?
Speaking off the top of my head, Senator Day, I think concern we've got is that, as has been presented by previous testimony, the department does not have as much control, as great a handle on the problem as we would like. That approach could be proven to be workable, acceptable to the communities. It may provide us that additional tool that would enhance the effort. It's not an authority that we're aggressively seeking at the present time. We think that the proposal before you, and indeed the bill that we have introduced on the House side, makes some fairly significant progress in the area, progress to the point where we have not requested any additional authority. To the extent that we get that authority, I suppose one could say, if properly administered, it would improve our ability to deal with the problem. I give that to you off the top of my head.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Thank you, Stan.
Thank you.
Dan Smith from Smith & Hill Recycling. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Dan Smith. I'm with Smith & Hill Systems, which is a statewide recycling company. We provide recycling services in every appreciable size city in the state. I'm also on the board of directors of the Association of Oregon Recyclers, and I'm the chairman of the Association of Oregon Recyclers Legislative Committee. And I do serve on the DEQ task force that's been running this act up the flagpole. I'm not expressing the opinion of the Association of Oregon Recyclers. Steve Colton has done that for the association. And the reason for that is that I wanted to play devil's advocate a little bit and express the concerns of the existing hands-on recycling efforts. I think that's important. And certainly I agree with the spirit and intent of this bill, and I don't think many people don't. We want to enhance the occurrence of recycling wherever we can. The existing, or quite a number of the existing hands-on recycling efforts are apprehensive about the effects of this bill. Obviously, if you're a drop-off center and people are bringing source-separated material to you all day long, and that opportunity is provided by somebody else, you would be concerned. And it's been tough. I'm proud of the job that the recycling industry has done in Oregon. We might not be making money, but when you compare the efforts in this state to the efforts in many other states, we've done a good job. And there's also middle area recyclers, over-the-door buyback centers for newsprint and cardboard, and perhaps they'll be cut out. And I just hate to see people, maybe the big picture, maybe more recycling will happen. I don't know that for sure, but I sure hate to see the existing struggling efforts have to bite the bullet if it comes to that. So that's an apprehension that certainly we have. I do feel that this is, and it's the term's been used a number of times, this is a backdoor approach. The illusion, or what's supposed to happen here, I suppose, is that the landfill operators, this bill forces the landfill operators, who really don't want to be forced, to force the haulers who really don't want to be forced to do something. And, you know, I question how effective you can be when you have, you're forcing somebody who doesn't want to be to force somebody else to do something they don't want to do. And it is important. There's one thing I don't think that has been addressed, and that is in order to provide the opportunity to recycle, you do have to educate people that it's available and how to use it, and you have to promote that system. And I don't mean to speak for the hauling industry at all, but I really don't think that the landfill operators or the haulers have the professional resources to provide that educational process, and it is a very expensive process. There was a question with respect to the definition of recycling that has evolved here, and I did want to mention that I really don't have a problem with that definition. It has been revised a little bit, though, and it's important because the term's been used a couple of times. People that have spoke before me that the particular item under the definition, okay, and it's important to remember we're not talking about, I don't think in rules, I think it's going to be a group of items. In the curbside program, I believe that there is an intention to group a number of items and apply the economic feasibility, and that does make a difference. As a recycler and hands-on recyclers, one big hazard we've learned is that if you mandate that a particular item, and I'll use the example of milk jugs, if you mandate that that thing be recycled, once as a drop-off center you start taking something, or as a curbside hauler you start taking a commodity, if your market fades away or your economics go away, the material still comes. You can't shut it off. It's hard to train people to do something, and then once you got them going your way, try to stop them. And that just means, I suppose, that we're going to have to, on rules here, really keep our wits about us. I do feel that this is the least effective, most expensive way to reach our goal if we want to enhance the recycling effort. And I do feel, as Lori pointed out, that probably the most effective, least expensive way to do this would be to rewrite the state solid waste chapter, mandate control on a county or regional government basis. And I think perhaps we should ask the question, are we pushing this act because it's the only foothold we have and it's the easiest, fastest, least passive resistance? And in doing that, are we going to lose perhaps a more effective, least expensive way to do things?
Thank you.
Questions?
Well, I think we might ask Mr. Carroll, what would be the alternative?
Pardon me?
What would be the alternative?
The alternative to 405? Well, I was alluding when I spoke of the alternative to exactly what Lori Parker said in the beginning, rewriting the solid waste chapter and mandating that every county or regional government perhaps have a solid waste management plan, and an integral part of that be a good and very enforceable waste reduction program, which be the same effect, but the difference is that the state of Oregon, the DEQ, in that particular example, would be mandating that the local government administer a program. And I think local government has a lot more resources. With the education example I used, local government can certainly do that a lot better than a landfill operator that drives a Caterpillar.
Well, it would seem, though, in the final analysis, that the local government, in the final analysis, to make it operate, would have to mandate separation of source. And the question is, how long would it take the development of that sort of planning effort and so forth? I don't know how long it would have taken to have ever gotten the bottle bill if we had mandated each city to develop a program for managing bottles. But instead, we just said you're going to return them. And that forced, in effect, private industry involved to make those adjustments in their distribution system to handle that problem instead of creating a new bureaucracy to recycle bottles. And it seems to me that that's almost the direction that you're suggesting, that local government should set up a recycling system. And actually what this bill says is through the present system with very little modification in that present system, you say that that present system has to operate in terms of recycling. I know I'm oversimplifying, but I do think that those are the opposite ends of it. I'm kind of fearful about these plans. I'm kind of fearful about the approach of 2244. I see LCDC all over again.
For sure. There is. I've kind of seen an evolution in the last 18 months particularly where the original concept was, let's make a law that everybody has to recycle. And I think that this is a regression of that, because you couldn't just pass a law, or at least the philosophy was, at the time, you can't make everybody recycle, but for darn sure, at this point, we can try to make sure that the opportunity is there, at least.
Thank you.
Senator Hamby.
Might there be a way that we might be able to provide the incentives that would allow counties the freedom to, let's say, under a franchise system, let's say, as a hauler, allow that hauler to reward in some way the household that does separate in preparation for recycling? Again, under a franchise system, I don't know what we do in a non-franchise, but I think that would be a much more positive approach. And I should certainly think that, I'm concerned about your earlier thought on the mid, I forget what you called it, the mid.
Middle area,
yes. And because I happen to know a family that, I mean, visits us weekly and in Hillsborough. And gosh, now it was in Washington County we're having our problems. What would you think of that?
Well, you are rewarded all automatically. And this, you got to remember, this does cover industry as well as residential solid waste generators. But you're rewarded in that you don't have to pay to have your garbage hauled off. Mm-hmm. And there are counties like my home county in Lane County, if you happen to haul your own garbage, you get a good discount if you have a stack of stuff to be recycled as well. So that's coming. I think that is happening where, you know, on a local basis.
The needs of the various counties are so unique. How do you recognize that?
That's the question, I think.
Know.
Okay, thank you. Bill Schlitt and Ezra Cook. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
My name is Bill Schlitt. I represent Sanitary Service, and the firm that I represent has been in business in Salem in excess of 50 years. We have been in recycling for approximately 7 years. Admittedly, the first four were utter disaster, and we went into it reluctantly. Since then, we have taken a hardline approach, as have all the Salem area collectors, and have attempted to make a program work. We have discussed this with the officials of Salem. Senator Hamby had reference to a monetary incentive program to the householder to instill more recycling in what they do. We discussed that with the city of Salem. We termed it a two-price system. A higher price for those that do not recycle, a lower price for those that do, having a balancing effect. Unfortunately, it puts the operator in a position of being judge and jury as to what is the proper amount of recycling. We do not feel that our people out on the routes are sophisticated enough to do this. We felt that it would also prompt a great deal of dispute amongst the companies and the customers. Therefore, we were not in favor of that system. We have tried to work out a decal program in which we can put decals on every can that we service, notifying our customers of the opportunity to recycle. The initial impact that we tried to make on the residences, we hired the Boy Scouts to cover the area which we serviced, each individual company. And we put flyers on every door, whether they were customers or not, to notify them of collection days and times. All they had to do was please have the material prepared and we would have a truck by there on a particular day to pick that material up. We found most of our flyers in the garbage cans that we serviced. People were not interested. And we found that, generally speaking, that you could rely on 4 to 5% of the public that will recycle no matter what. If they had to drive 40 miles, they're going to recycle. You also have 4 to 5% that if they had to pay $50 a month, they wouldn't care. They are not going to recycle. Unfortunately, the 90% in the middle, if the mood strikes them, they will. Those are the people that we're trying to get to at this time. In the best times, we in the Salem area probably get somewhere in the neighborhood of 90 to 100 tons of material a month. During the winter months, obviously, this declines due to inclement weather and due to the fact that combustible materials such as corrugated and newsprint are being used for a fuel fraction if those people have fireplaces, stoves, etc. We have tried to expand on what we're doing. Unfortunately, the markets are not there. And this is one of the hardest things to overcome. It's a very volatile market. The last report I got, and I may be corrected, was $15 a ton for tin. And that was in a Seattle locale. Consider what it would cost to transport a drop box or two drop boxes to Seattle when those boxes haul 8 to 10 tons apiece. We met with the city of Salem and we did a program for 1 year in which we were trying to get a waste composition study to determine what are we keeping out of the waste stream. At the end of that year, and all calculations in, what was recycled from the waste stream in our community would have added 2% to the volumes going into the Browns Island landfill. It was almost negligible. But we're not unique. There are a number of collectors in this room today that are in the recycling end of it. I don't know of any landfill in the state of Oregon at the current time that does not offer some type of recycling to the people that are there. As president of OSSI, there are 145 member companies that belong to our organization. All of them are doing something in the area of recycling. From one of the most successful programs, which is being carried on in Corvallis, to a mere window dressing effect. We are trying to overcome that within our own industry because we want the thing to work. Which gets us down to Senate Bill 405. From an industry standpoint, we heartily endorse the concept of Senate Bill 405. But we, like the other people that have spoke before us, have definite concerns on the bill as it is presented. We would welcome the opportunity to work with whoever is drafting this bill and try and come up with a workable solution that would benefit the public, the recyclers, and also satisfy some of the needs that you people are faced with here in making your determinations. I would say, in summary, that the collection industry does heartily support recycling. We are trying to do it as best we know how. I believe Mr. Cook has some comments to make also.
Yes, first a question from Senator Hamby.
May I
yes,
ask
ma'am.
That on your flyers in the marketing effort to encourage recycling, the flyers that were later found in the cans, was there any kind of a personal financial incentive offered to the householder, or was it only a service provider?
Basically, it was a service that was intended to instill the idea of if you are being serviced now and you are paying for two cans, wouldn't it be to your benefit to only have to pay for one? Also, the service was offered to those people that did not have regular collection service at all to save them a trip to a landfill. What we were trying to do is help the community. We stressed in our flyer that we had no intention of hurting the existing programs that were in force. We have two very strong ones in the city of Salem, Garten Foundation, which works with the handicapped, and Clayton Ward Company. We also stated that we had no intention of infringing on the Boy Scouts, church organizations, any other charitable organization that was actively involved in the recycling effort. We did encourage people that were supporting those organizations to please continue to support them. But if you are not, work with us and make the program a viable program in the community.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Cook.
And thank you. I'm Ezra Cook, 720 North Davis Street, McMinnville. I have a long record of involvement in the waste management field, and that we were the predecessor company to Sanitary Service in Salem and have operated a like service in Yamhill County for 54 years. I've been associated with OSSI from its founding days, and recently had some posture in the National Solid Waste Management Association, where I've been on their board of directors and as past president of the National Association, representing some 10,000 contractors across this nation and around the world. I've recycled from the time I was big enough to know what waste paper was, and my earliest recollection is on the corner of 17th and B Street, where we had a paper shed. And as a seven-year-old, I had the opportunity to stuff paper into a hand baler and attempt to recover from the resources, the waste of this community, as something worthwhile. I need to pay tribute to a couple of people who spoke ahead of us, because more frequently than not, I have been on the opposite sides of the fence from Lloyd Parker. And today I'd like to come endorsing the concept, but opposing the vehicle. Because I say I am a recycler, and I would gather that I am that to some degree reluctantly, because I happen to be in the business of waste management, and this has an economic connotation for me. And if there is any certain or common resume that I would make of the proposed legislation, it is that it seems to encompass, in my estimation, about everything anybody ever knew about either collection, resource recovery, recycling, disposal, and so forth, does not address the basic problem, and does not present what I would consider to be an acceptable solution. And that basically because it ignores the economics. I have heard Senator Roberts address himself to them of that, and some of you have alluded to that particular situation. Senator Hamby has asked a couple of questions in regards to that. Let me say, while we today have been brought, and Lori thinks, screaming into the 20th century backwards, we today are the proud owners of Recycling at Riverbend, which is a merger of the Yamhill Valley Recyclers' efforts for a period of years, and where Lori led that struggle in Yamhill County, where we had been doing our own limited, economically sound recycling, and then because the economics didn't work for Yamhill Recyclers, who became an arm of the Portland recycling team, which has a reputation around the world as being the outstanding recycling effort of its nature, of its kind. But they operated on grants and gifts and free labor, seated positions, and their economic base is totally different than I am encountering in the marketplace. I think you're guilty of underestimating the successes which presently exist in the state of Oregon. No other state has addressed through its collection organizations or through the professional recyclers recycling as aggressively as has the state of Oregon, or had the results, if you please. If you went north or you went south, the much heralded success stories are limited to something in the neighborhood of 190 ton of recyclable material in Marin County at a horrendous cost and economically totally unsound. I think a Corvallis can point to 190 ton of recyclable material in 1 month, and our infant organization last month recycled 90 ton of material. Now, if you were to weigh the entire recycling and hold it up as comparison to any other what you might call successful efforts, Oregon is so far ahead that I don't remember who's second. Now, a great deal of that is true to the or due to the awareness that the collection industry has of the need. We met the problem, and we had it within our hands either to destroy Yamhill Valley recyclers or to use a program in which they had invested a tremendous amount of effort and tie it together with a need that we had, one of waste reduction for funding for a new landfill. And by the way, we are the only people in the state of Oregon who have, under this present organization, DEQ, sited a landfill, closed a landfill, opened a new landfill, and funded the major portions of that landfill with DEQ revenue bonds. We think we have an enviable record. We merged those two operations into what is a fledgling effort today to address a full-scale recycling program which includes curbside collection for every community in the county, for drop-off stations conveniently located for those who need them, for a full-fledged recycling plant at the landfill, and we address all of that within the framework of no government subsidies. All of our people, we have only 5 full-time employees, we are a nonprofit corporation, all of them are paid adequate salaries out of our funds, and today we're running $2,000 a month in cash disbursements behind our income. We don't intend to keep it that way. When we incorporated as nonprofit, we obviously did not envision it to be so successfully nonprofit, and our vision is still cast upon those times when, either through the increase of materials or the increase of the